morning, industrial policy, development policy, it's actually industrial development policy development division. I thought it was just the industrial development division. It's got a lot of titles there. Thank you. And then we've also got Mr. Dagama, is it legal? For the next one, right. Is she here now for this? Where is she? Okay. Is that Dr. Naidu there, Director Primary Minerals Processing? Right. And Mr. M. Rania, is that right? Miss. Yes, it's Miss. You see, not Mr. Where's Miss? Thank you. Director Ferrous Metals, is it? Right. Okay. Now, you're all very welcome. And we, at this point, without delaying us any further, we have three apologies, but one is a late apology, a traffic apology. The other is a late apology due to the attendance at a meeting which started at 8, and the member will be here in about 15 minutes or so, 20. And I think those are the only two. Dr. James here, attending to urgent party matters. Right, so we have those apologies, and that means we're expecting another two members along with us. So on that note, we're going to move on pretty swiftly with the meeting then. So can I please get someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Yes, Honourable McIntosh. Seconded, Honourable Kubasa. Right. And Minister, it's just trying to recall, but I do think this is your first meeting this year with the committee, am I right? And so, yes, we certainly all hope to be continuing to work together in a very cooperative and constructive manner, especially that some of us may have had a bit of a break and refreshed and whatever, notwithstanding a massive, very heavy program that you have and we have, of course. So we look forward to this year together, and we're going to immediately hand over to you, Minister.
Okay, thanks. I think you've got a few items on the agenda, but the one I was asked to speak to was this one on the Iron and Steel Interministerial Committee and Interdepartmental Task Team. I'll say a few prefatory remarks about that, and then the presentation will be delivered by Garth Strachan. I was also informed that you wanted me to say something about a GOA, and I don't know when you want that in the agenda. You'll guide me on that. So let me just say a few things about the Iron and Steel Task Team. And I want to start off by saying that I think it's becoming increasingly aware to a number of us, and I'm certainly one of them, is that we need to construct a new competitive advantage for value-added production in this country. And I think that that has got to be based on access to mineral products, which we are endowed with by nature in South Africa. We have a number of minerals. The minerals that we have remaining in South Africa, with gold as a declining asset, are industrial products that are used in downstream manufacturing. Many of those products at the moment only to a limited extent support manufacturing in this country. And I become aware from a number of investors who are indicating to us that they are willing to increase their presence in manufacturing sectors in South Africa if they can obtain access to mineral products. Now, what do they mean by that? They don't mean you can buy it at the London Metal Exchange price. You can buy it at import parity price, which means what you would cost to import it plus the cost of transport, even if the thing is produced right next door. They don't mean that. They mean they want to see that there is some price advantage in terms of access to mineral products by locating in South Africa. So I think that this issue that we have debated for a long time, but which I think we're beginning to move on now, which is called beneficiation, adding value to mineral products, and a similar challenge confronts us also in the area of agricultural products, adding value to agricultural products, is very fundamental to the way forward. So we get more value if we get more value in our economy in terms of jobs, but also value in our economy if we process mineral products to a higher level before we export them, even if we are not actually using them in our own economy for the final stages of beneficiation. But it's also important for us to make sure that we have access to mineral products at a price advantage in the South African economy to support and sustain industrial production. Now, iron and steel is very, very critical in this regard. Steel is a major industrial component in a whole lot of industrial subsectors, not to mention in construction and infrastructure development, which is the main driver of our economic recovery and growth and development as we move further forward. So it's a very fundamental question. Now, we've had a situation in South Africa where we have rich deposits of iron ore, but we haven't had the corresponding competitive price for steel in South Africa. That's been our challenge for a long, long time. So this task team has been focusing on that particular issue with the iron and steel task team. Now, let me just say that there are, in fact, three sub-streams of work that have taken place, and those correspond to the resources that we have available in South Africa. Let me just describe them very briefly. The first resource is we have the richest deposit of iron ore that we have in South Africa is in the Northern Cape in the area of Sishen, where we have probably at this stage a quarter of a century plus. It used to be 30 years, and I don't think it is any longer. We have about 25 more years of output from that. That's our highest quality, our best mineral resource of iron ore. But secondly, we have more resources, actually, of iron ore. But they are byproducts of mining that takes place in other operations. For example, there's a great big dump at the copper mine in Limpopo, which was just a dump, but it's full of iron tailings. It's called Highveld iron. And there is a possibility that we can turn that iron ore into steel products. That's the second stream. The third stream is what's often described as the resource above the ground, and that is scrap metal. At the moment, we are exporting scrap metal all over the world. We are exporting scrap metal actually to countries that don't allow the export of scrap metal from their own economies. We're exporting it to countries like that. This scrap metal export is also a source of potential crime in that if somebody rips off the wiring cables or other products of building sites, very often it finds itself into the scrap industry and is then exported. If there is illegal gold mining, that gold is smelted with other metals and exported as scrap metal. So we know that's happening. So not only is our resource going, but also there are these crime associated with export of scrap metal. So the task team is looking at all of those, and what can we do to deal with all of those? Well, first of all, the question of Sishen. I think you'll see the whole history of it in the presentation. Iron ore mining as well as the steel manufacturing historically were under a state-owned company called ISCOR. ISCOR was not only privatized, it was also unbundled into the two separate operations. And there was a contractual arrangement entered into between the two companies that 21.4% of the output of Sishen would be made available at cost plus 3% to support steel making in South Africa, and that steel maker was supposed to pass that on in the form of a developmental steel price. I think this is a huge problem historically if we look back. It's a contract between two companies. There are all kinds of issues about who owns that 21.4%, subject of court cases, which we can't go into at this point. But the task team has said that what we will do is that there will be amendments to the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act. Those amendments are out for public comment. They will allow the minister to designate particular percentages of mineral products which will have to be made available at a discounted price to support manufacturing in the country. There are other things related to the infrastructure program, and there are various other measures which will be outlined in the presentation, which we have said we will deploy. But immediately let me say that we have this situation with ArcelorMittal South Africa, which is the steel manufacturer. We have had a long and I think rather fruitless engagement with him, in which we have been basically batting to and fro what is the basis on which they determine the final steel price and what is the final steel price in South Africa compared to other jurisdictions. And what strikes me is a quotation from Karl Marx, which I've thrown at everybody from the head of ArcelorMittal downwards. Philosophers have interpreted the world, the point is to change it. I don't want to have another philosophical discussion about how the steel price is set. The point is we need to change it. And so when we met in Davos, we met with senior managers from ArcelorMittal at my level, and then also I was part of a meeting with Mr. Lakshmi Mittal. And we put the following proposition, which they have agreed to. You go away at your top management and define a destination steel price which you can arrive at, which is a competitive steel price for steel making in South Africa that will give us a competitive advantage, and come and tell us what it will take, including what you need from government to get there. We will simultaneously do a bit of work on the same issue. What destination can we arrive at? Let's negotiate the destination and let's see what it takes to get there. We've also indicated, of course, that there are other competitors around the world, other steel makers, who tell us that give us cost plus 3% and we will be able to do it. So that's the background that we're in, and those are the discussions that we're on. That's point number one. Point number two, on the Highveld, we need more steel makers in South Africa. We need more competition in the steel manufacturing sector. We think that's very important. There's a project, Garth will talk about it, it's called Marosini. Which is a project which the IEDC is involved in, which is going to be located in Middelburg, which will be processing the Highveld steel. Now, I think we're not happy with the pace it's taking. We want to accelerate the pace of implementation of that. Garth will talk about that in a minute. But that's the second one that we're working on that. And the third one is the scrap metal. There is a notice which is out under the name of the Minister of Economic Development, which is about an export arrangement that will apply for scrap metal. There will be three important processes. One, you will have to get a certificate from under the Secondhand Goods Act to demonstrate that what you want to export is not stolen property. Second, you will have to get a metallurgical certificate to demonstrate that what you're exporting is actually what you say it is. You say it's scrap iron, it's not scrap iron mixed in with illegally mined gold. Third, well, that's what happens. Illegally mined gold is mixed in, smelted in with other metals and sold as scrap metal. That's how it gets out of the country. Third, there will be a price advantage which will have to be offered first of all to the local industry for a period of time before you're allowed to export. That's the proposal that's out in order that we can support industries in South Africa that are going to benefit from the availability of the scrap metal. As I said before, the scrap metal is an enormously important resource in every other economy, and some of the economies to whom we export scrap metal, unprocessed scrap metal, don't allow their own scrap metal to be exported. I think that's the situation we're in. So those are the three broad lines of work. I suggest now that perhaps Garth Strachan is allowed to go through the presentation, which will give us more detail. and then I can come back, or you can come back with any questions that there may be about this. Thanks. Madam Chair, obviously you'll interrupt me if I'm giving too much detail. As the Minister said, South Africa has this huge mineral resource. There's some quibbling about the exact estimated value. No competitive advantage accrues or is passed on to domestic manufacturing. Historical competitive advantages, as we discussed with the committee last year in a lot of detail, especially low electricity prices is a thing of the past, and import parity pricing policies are practiced by producers who enjoy market dominance for key inputs into manufacturing steel, plastics and polymers. Kumba iron ore accounts for 80% of domestic production and is the world's leading supplier of lump ore. Global demand and an increase in the price from plus minus $80 in 2007 to north of $160 from 2010 resulted in exports of unbeneficiated ore to north of 70% of total production. AMSA accounts for 75% of domestic steel production. Until March 2010, it derived this massive cost advantage under the cost plus three supply arrangement, which, as we know, as the Minister said, wasn't passed on as a developmental steel price. The domestic steel prices in South Africa have consistently been in the highest quartile in the world. I beg your pardon, that slide is a little bit busy. We have presented it to the committee in the past, and the blue skyscraper, the dark blue one, demonstrates that in the basket of countries listed there, we are in the highest, consistently the highest quartile of global prices, notwithstanding the fact that many of those countries don't have any of their own iron ore deposits. ArcelorMittal enjoys market dominance and their pricing strategy has not been in support of downstream manufacturing. They've experienced a number of plant shutdowns. The most recent one is at the Funderbale plant that was on Saturday, and the DTI has been at the plant over the last few days assessing the damage and assessing the extent to which the security of supply issues are catered for in the manufacturing sector. We think that long-term maintenance and capital investment arrangements at ArcelorMittal are a concern. As the Minister said, simultaneous and interlocking court processes have retarded the progress. High international prices have fueled a massive unimpeded expansion of scrap metals, again, as the Minister has referred to. We think this has negatively impacted upon supply to domestic scrap processing industries. We have done extensive modelling work on this and demonstrated, in our view, unequivocally that job losses in the scrap metal industry will be minimal and job gains far outweigh the job losses that may accrue. The unimpeded export of scrap metal, as the Minister said, is associated with a crime. Madam Chair, I'm not sure how much of this detail you'd like me to go through. Perhaps if it meets with your permission, I could jump to July 2011, the first interim supply agreement, which was valid before
1 year between AMSA and Sishen expires. The second supply agreement, valid for 1 year, is signed and is used as a base to create the second agreement in order to avoid an onerous and protracted exercise of seeking a new agreement. This operated for 1 year, and precisely 1 year later, AMSA notified the minister of the expiry of the agreement and subsequent deadlock in terms of the new agreement, and AMSA implies significant production cuts and job losses if no agreement is reached. The DTI, in August, the minister appoints a mediator, and to cut a long story short, there is a new agreement secured between a commercial agreement between SEOC and AMSA. I think at the time, the DTR, the minister, noted with concern that the parties failed yet again to agree on a developmental steel price, either by intent or outcomes, and that the agreement didn't ensure a discounted iron ore price, in short. And I think we're making the point that this strongly underlines Cabinet's conviction for the need of for policy interventions to secure competitive advantage for domestic manufacturing. Cabinet therefore approved the final policy instruments of the interdepartmental task team, and those are a fast-track legislative process led by DMR to amend the MPRDA to secure competitive advantage. Secondly, as the Minister said, a process led by the Economic Development Department to utilize the International Trade Administration Act to safeguard the supply of affordable scrap metal to domestic mills and curtail the abuse of scrap metal, to amend the Competition Act, and the fast-track process led by the IDC for new players in the steel sector. Implementation progress, in short, Madam Chair, the amended draft bill was tabled in December 2012. This was after Cabinet approval in November 2012. It's been gazetted. It's out for public comment, and it's to be tabled in Parliament. Section 26 amends the provisions, or the proposals are to amend the provisions and align with national priorities related to access to minerals for local beneficiation. In more specifically, to determine the percentage per mineral commodity and the price in respect of such percentage in a production cycle as may be required for local beneficiation, in a process led by the Department of Trade and Industry, to impose that every producer shall offer to local beneficiators a certain percentage as prescribed. This will apply to iron ore being auctioned to more than one steel producer on condition that the developmental price is passed on as a developmental steel price, and to provide consent for the export of designated minerals subject to conditions the Minister may determine. This would be for the benefit of the obvious linkages with respect to feedstocks at developmental prices to the manufacturing sector, backward linkages, the local content to maximize local inputs into mining. This is the backward linkages, the supply side, which I may add will be included as a significant program in the IPAP 2013, which the Minister will launch in April, combined with significant programs and in with respect to technology and skills development, and finally the provision of mining infrastructure at non-discriminatory tariffs for other economic activities. As the Minister said, under the Minister of Economic Development to use the International Trade Administration Act to safeguard the supply, and that will require a metallurgical certificate, a certificate demonstrating that the goods haven't been stolen. The Minister of Economic Development's draft scrap metal policy directive was published in the Government Gazette on the 25th of January. A comment is open for 4 weeks. The draft directive sets out the policy, including a price preference system. The Minister proposes ITAC to implement to further regulate the export. It proposes scrap metal should not be exported unless it has first been offered to domestic users at price discount. ITAC's draft guidelines set out the proposed conditions for exporters. The target date for implementation is the 1st of April, and discussions are underway between EDD, ITAC, and SAPS on introducing regulations by the Minister of Police in terms of the Secondhand Goods Act, and a task team will be established to inspect scrap metal consignments. Such inspections, as we've said, would have to comply. With respect to the amendment of the Competition Act, EDD is leading the process to make the amendments to the Competition Act, including in the case of the iron ore and steel value chain, to ensure that iron ore price concessions accruing to the primary dominant player in the steel industry are passed on to the downstream users. This includes work to determine appropriate powers to determine pricing methodologies, monitor compliance and sanction non-compliance. This might be achieved through powers given to the competition authorities or other bodies, including regulators, where appropriate given the nature of such strategic industries. And the target date is June 13, 2013. Then, the IDC, as we have reported before, Madam Chair, work is advanced and is in an advanced stage of feasibility, not feasibility, for a new steel production facility. Modeling suggests that it can affect a 10% reduction in the price of steel on its in itself across a range of flat and long steel products. International investors are ready to enter into a joint venture to establish such a facility. It would utilize low-cost iron ore fines and tailings of the type that the Minister was referring to. In other words, it's a new technology, less energy-intensive technology as well, which would be a bonus. The capacity would have to be optimally located in relation to logistics costs and the tailings dumps, which are very significant. Another advantage would be that the technology would eliminate the need for expensive imported coking coal. And again, as the Minister has suggested in the past, strong conditionalities would have to be built in to the arrangement to ensure strong government control in order to avoid the shortcomings of the ISCO unbundling and ensure developmental objectives of the type that we've outlined. The Massarini project is a long and flat steel production, and as we said, to provide an alternative domestic steel supply. The inability to meet the required product range has contributed to high capital. It will require high capital costs and bring some competition to the market. At the moment, we are convinced that there are inefficiencies in the existing steel production. The impact of the IDS acquisition of SCORE. The IDSC's acquisition of SCORE brought about the Masserini SCORE option, which entails separating the long and flat product production facilities, addresses market penetration, approaches implementation in a phased manner, and reduces technical risk and enables the benefit of the learning curve to be applied to the long product portion of the project. Accelerated delivery of additional steel capacity and leveraging of a brownfield project, and facilitates international operating partners to develop local comfort and expertise prior to implementing the larger flat product project. In other words, Madam Chair, all our eggs are not in one basket. In addition to the measures that we've spoken about and the possibility of a new investment, the IDC is working closely with existing companies. As I said, the feasibility study of the Masserini project is a fully integrated steel project, will be completed in 2012. The IRR as a flat product project is acceptable. In other words, it meets all globally acceptable internal rate of return projections. The interest is in operating both SCORE and Masserini as a combined operation, ensuring access to SCORE's distribution network. Access to SCORE's information resulted in some delays in the due diligence process. However, this is not anticipated to impact the overall schedule. The selection of a partner and the negotiation of the participation agreement is anticipated in quarter 2, 2013, although, as the Minister has said, everything possible is being done to try and bring that forward. The detailed feasibility study is $350 million, and that will commence in its final phase in 2013. The anticipated outcome is 18 months. As I said, we're trying to bring that forward. And the environmental impact assessment is to be done concurrently and as fast as possible. Thank you.
Thank you for the input. I don't remember, so I'm standing in for the chairperson and some urgent business to attend to. And then here's the presentation from the department. This issue of the iron ore intra-trust team was very critical. We've awaited it for quite a long time. So I think that is high time that we engage that. We know very well that when we look back, the issue of the mineral endowment of the country is so huge that if we must ensure that we use it for the betterment of the lives of our people. So I think, honorable members, I'm going to give you a chance to interrogate the report, and then I'll be expecting the hands. Since I'm the left winger, I'll start from my left. I'll start with the Honorable Hill Lewis, Honorable Ambrosini, Honorable McIntosh, in that order. Over to you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. My question is about the financial performance of AMSA. The Minister said we mustn't have a philosophical discussion about the pricing of steel, and he's quite right, but the fact remains that if AMSA is not a financially successful company, it's not going to make any steel, and it's just had its worst year on record, I think, or certainly for a long time. I believe it was about R500 million in the red. So, you know, and that's at present market conditions. If it's then forced to adopt some kind of developmental pricing model, how do you see that impacting on the sustainability or the viability of AMSA as a business and a producer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, my apologies for late arrival. No disrespect meant, and my even deepest apology for my leaving now. There is a joint opposition party conference which commands my attendance, even though it's much less interesting than this, but that's what one needs to do for politics. No, these are very serious issues. That's what makes us the money. That's what makes us to... politics won't feed the stomachs. This will. And I have a 1,000 questions. I won't be able to listen to the answers, so just express a concern. I've seen those scrap metals deposits on the docks in Cape Town, ready to be loaded on the ships. I mean, there are mountains. It's mountains of metal, all rusted, all thing. I mean, if one wants to smuggle a kilo of gold in there, or 2 kilos of gold, nobody can find it. And these things of asking certificates, I mean, there is a tendency from government to try to solve insolvable problems in a perfunctory manner. Please give me a certificate that these things are not stolen. Yes, no. Sorry, they are stolen, I'm going to tell you. And it's the same thing. Please tell us there is no gold. It cannot be verified, but it increases the cost of business, increases the thing. I belong to a school, I don't want to do philosophy either, to a school of thought that I don't see why we have this notion of legally mined and illegally mined gold, and it's to support monopolies which should not exist. But I'm looking at the cost of regulation on what is a line of business with very, very small profit margins on very, very large quantities. And again, my apologies for having to disappear.
Honourable McIntosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, it's a very, very serious matter that we're looking at. I also think we need to bear in mind that a developmental policy, and by developmental, I don't adhere to the view that it's developmental means social engineering from a hard left position. I see developmental as growing a country which is emerging as an industrialized nation. Now, what is interesting about the minister's presentation is that in some ways it seems to suggest that beneficiation is suddenly a new kid on the block. Madam Chair, we've been beneficiating coal into electricity, which is one of our greatest resources, and we must improve the quality of that beneficiation in terms of emissions and things. But, I mean, there's a huge industry beneficiating a most valuable natural resource, which is critical for our economic and industrial growth. So there's an example. I mean, again, a developmental element was Sasol. Sasol was started by government as a developmental project, and it's turned into a hugely successful business. So was ISCO. General Smuts and a man called Van der Bijl, who he appointed to, developed ISCO as a developmental project because they said South Africa needs an iron and steel industry. So I think anybody accepts that a country's national interest is served by developmental projects. Now, what happened with the privatization of ISCO, which I personally actually didn't follow very carefully, although I was very surprised to see that we disposed of it to a family who are the hardest-nosed capitalist entrepreneurs with no interest at all in the developmental agenda. Whereas at least the South Africans who were running ISCO, etc., said, well, we're doing something for our country working at ISCO. Whereas what do they care? He owns steel mills in Poland, in India, all around the world. He's not interested. So I think personally our privatization process, which I'm not saying shouldn't have happened, I think it was just not well structured. And of course now there's apparently been a Funderbale fire at Funderbale Park, so it's not working. So I just wanted to get it clear, Madam Chair, that beneficiation is going on. Also, platinum. I was astonished to see how much beneficiated platinum in these exhaust things, etc. I mean, I don't know what the figure was, but it was huge. So we are already beneficiating platinum in quite a significant way. So I think all I'm saying is beneficiation is not a new kid in the block. We were producing the largest quantity of ferrochrome in Middelburg in the world at one stage. I don't know why it's been allowed to be reduced. So there was huge beneficiation of stainless steel, raw stainless steel. That's my one point I want to make. The other one is, you know, Madam Chair, this second-hand steel stuff. And really, one of the things that concerns me as a South African is we have a government in this country. They have a mandate, a huge mandate, big majority. Why don't they govern? The second-hand steel has been a problem for more than 3 years, Madam Chair. On my farm in the Escort District, they steal fences. They steal all kinds of things to get metal. And I don't know if ministers drive much. I don't think they do. They fly in helicopter everywhere. But we ordinary citizens drive up and down the roads. And you see these lorries like my colleague here. We see these lorries moving down to the Durban airport, down the N3. And you say to yourself, what's this government doing? I mean, what kind of government have we got that they didn't do something 3 years ago? At least, all right, I understand we've got international agreements, we've got all these problems. But why don't they just immediately put a moratorium in and say, look, guys, we're not having a valuable natural asset, which, well, I suppose it's not quite natural, but it's a processed asset, to leave our country. So I'd really want to, Madam Chair, say to the Minister, and I think it's great that he's here and we appreciate his time and we know how busy he is, but really, I want to urge him and his cabinet colleagues, start governing the country. Don't spend too much time consulting everywhere when it's urgent. Then the program, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry, I haven't really asked a question yet. Let's leave it. I think there. I do have one or two other questions, but I think it's an interesting thing. The only thing is whether this plan of the IDT will, in fact, are we confident that we will get hard-nosed profit seekers to buy into a developmental agenda? And I think, and I'd like to perhaps ask Mr. Strachan, are they building? Well, I suppose he answered with that IRR, because the IRR said there is profit for people. But we're not going to get investment if there isn't profit. And we've got to accept that. What we're saying is you want a fair profit, and a profit that is, in a sense, at least got a developmental stance. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable McIntosh. Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd also like to extend my apology for arriving late. You know, the President delivered a State of the Nation address yesterday, which has inspired everyone. I'm very happy that even today with the opposition are in agreement with a lot of things, starting with Honorable Ambrosini, acknowledging that the press conference of the opposition is not so important. So not what you're doing here. That's the inspiring speech of the President yesterday. I cannot even agree more with Honorable McIntosh with the position he's taken. Well, it really, I think that that speech has really showed that South Africa comes first for everyone. We must make it to succeed. Chairperson, what is critical here? I'll just follow on from what Honorable McIntosh has said. The issue of the scrap metal, Chairperson, is giving us a problem. There's one thing which we can have with steel. The steel can be reproduced many times. It's something which you can call, what you can do, recycle 100%. You can recycle it 100%. So what is critical here? The issue of selling this scrap abroad is not good for the country. I think that one, we have to acknowledge it. It is even worse when we find that, when we hear that some of our purest metals like gold, like platinum, get embedded in the steel. So it means that in the scrap steel. So it means that when it is exported as scrap steel, other people are going to get a premium price on the other side. So I think that I'll agree with Honorable McIntosh that this thing, if it's necessary, let's push for this committee that we appreciate the report, the stance which the intra-departmental task team has done. But the issue is that sometimes it might be a little bit too late to report. the issue of the moratorium on the export of this scrap steel is something which must be considered as of yesterday, because really we have to deal with that. That's why I highly second Honorable McIntosh on that regard. Number two, Chair, is the issue of the other mills which are going to be established. The President yesterday spoke about the black industrialists. He was not apologetic about that. I think that in the whole process, is that concept taken in, is it cascading, so that at the end of the day, we don't have hard-nosed capitalists, which Honorable McIntosh spoke about a few minutes ago, taking over again that type of the project. Because, you know, I like what France has done with hard-nosed capitalists in the accelerometers. They threatened them to expel them from France when they started messing up with their employment issues there. So I think that even here in South Africa, we must assert the authority of government. We must assert the authority of the people that, the first of all the minerals which are here, before they can benefit anyone outside the country, it must start first with the people of the country. So that's why that the issue of black industrialists is it taken into consideration, so that that project of the IDC score and whatever, it must really take that into consideration. The other issue, Chair, the issue of the developmental price, I think that it must be supported. Irrespective, ArcelorMittal, it might be on the loss now, but it was making a killing all over the years. We cannot nurse it now. I think that the issue of the developmental price is something which we cannot negotiate. It's not something which we cannot compromise. It must, whatever iron ore which they are going to get, they must provide that developmental price at the agreement which was done before. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khadebe. Thank you. Well, I mean, it's good to see the entire committee has agreed on that point. I assume, Minister, that you're going to be marching ahead and you'll get a full agreement here from all members of the committee in the direction the department is pursuing. Minister.
No, thanks. I'll come to those points in a second. Let me start off with the question by Minister Hill-Lewis, Mr. Hill-Lewis, and then we can also just get the team to comment. I think it is the case that ArcelorMittal is not in a good financial situation. When I met with some of their senior management abroad, one of the issues they highlighted around this was the access to the feedstock and the uncertainty they had around that. That issue that we facilitated a one-year agreement with them. Now, when the thing bust up a few years ago, we offered to intervene. And the two parties decided not to use our good offices. And I later found out that what they were concerned about is what we were going to expect in terms of the transfer of the price advantage downstream into the price of steel. And I think that we are uncompromising about that. So there's a 1 year price agreement now. It's only a 1 year. It's an interim thing which we've arranged. We said it must be a step towards, but it's not the final outcome. So, I said to Mr. Luxmi Mittal, I said, we understand you're not a charitable institution, but the fact of the matter is that other non-charitable institutions around the world say they can come to South Africa. We have had to test that water out, and we have to see where you are in terms of you're the existing player, you're the ones who own the assets. Let us change the terms of the conversation into what I already described it as. What kind of price can we set in South Africa? What kind of price can you set? And what does it take to get there? Let's see where it takes us. If that doesn't take us anywhere, well, there are other options. I think that's the message which we've sent to them. I think there is a lesson. I mean, let's just get the timeline right. ISCO was privatized before 1994. It was one of Darby de Villiers' things, and if I recall, it was about 1992 or something like that. It was privatized right at the dawn of our transition. Then there was ISCO, it was unbundled at the same time, and then the steel mills were run until 2001, and then it was handed over to ArcelorMittal in the context of a big crisis of the privatized players at that time. I think the lesson we need to learn from that is that when we do a deal like that with any player, we need to tie down their obligations, not have them contained in a contract between two private companies or a general indication at the outset of the business proposition. That's what we need to learn from that. We need to tie down these into measurable, deliverable obligations. That's the point, I think, that we need to learn from that. Well, on the scrap metal, the 2 points. First of all, Mr. McIntosh is, don't spend time consulting elsewhere. The government must just act. Now, I hope I understand that if the government were to do that, Mr. McIntosh's party and Mr. Hill-Lewis's party wouldn't be rushing to the public protector, and Mr. Ambrosini wouldn't be going to the Constitutional Court. We are processes. And what happens in this country, as I'm sure you know, is you don't follow the process. No matter what the merits of the thing are, it gets overturned in the court. That's what happens. So we have to follow the process. Now, we have been discussing, we have, I think, been united that we need to have much more of the scrap metal used in the South African economy and not exported. We need to turn the relative prices round so that it becomes much more a proposition for scrap metal merchants to make their product available in the South African market than internationally. At the moment, it's everything stacked in favor of international. And I think that we talked at one stage about an export tax. That was a proposal that came from us. And then we went through a whole discussion about what is this going to entail, what is its implications, and so on and so forth. And then I think we came up with a mechanism we've got down here. And that mechanism is clear. I quite honestly couldn't give a monkey's if it's hard to do business to export scrap metal. It must be easier to do business to supply scrap metal to the South African economy. We are going to place the onus on the exporter to show that the scrap metal wasn't exported, to show that it's not gold. It's not the customs officer that's got to dig in among the scrap metal. The exporter's got to prove to us that this isn't got gold in it. That's why they've got to get a metallurgical certificate. That's why they have to go to the police and they have to show that it isn't Mr. McIntosh's fence that's been cut down or Telkom's power lines and telephone lines that have been cut down. They're going to have to show that. And then they can export it, but only after they've offered it as a price. It's turning relative prices in favor of supplying into the South African market. That's what it's about. And I think that's the mechanism. I think the time, if I'm not wrong, Garth can correct me, the time for consultation is almost up, and the time for implementation is going to begin. So I don't think a moratorium is really required now. We've followed the processes. We've gone through the mechanisms. I think it's time for us to start implementing. I think perhaps Garth can just fill us in on the on the time. The thing about black industrialists, I think there are plenty of other measures we're trying to put in place, exactly what we want to see. We've taken up that call by the President. That's the whole basis of some of the amendments in the BEE codes, which maybe it's another opportunity to discuss those. It's all about supporting local entrepreneurs. It's about building business models in which there are relations between big and small manufacturing companies. That's what it's all about. That's what incubation's about. That's what the interventions we try to make in the small business program is all about. But let me just ask then, let me make another point about beneficiation. Mr. McIntosh raised, beneficiation is not new. This is correct. And of course, there has been some beneficiation in the South African economy, as he's described. Sasol is a very good example, and so is to some degree, turning coal into electricity. Now, I think we need to understand beneficiation. There are different stages of beneficiation, and beneficiation can mean different things. And I think you must understand there's a value chain. We need to move up the value chain. We need to move up the value chain and add more value to products, even that we don't use in our own industrial processes. And the reason we need to do that is we get more value and more jobs. Where's the example? I've given this example before. It's this mineral sands project where the pre-feasibility study tells us We get $440 a ton by selling mineral sands out of Saldanha unprocessed. We turn that into titanium alloy. That's not aircraft parts. That's titanium alloy. That's a metal. We get $100,000 a ton. And we get thousands of jobs. So we need to do that much more. We need to export less dirt out of the ground and more, turn it into something before we export it, even if we don't have it in our economy. But then there are a series of industrial opportunities which I know can arise if we are able to get price advantages for sufficiently processed mineral products to be used downstream. One example, I mean, there's several examples, but the Platinum Group is one. The Platinum Group is one. We can offer a significant discount on platinum metals, and there's work going on this. We can stimulate exhaust catalytic converter industries in this country. We can also fuel cell technology. There's research work going on already about fuel cells, not fuel cell cars so much, but fuel cell small power stations. That's something we can do, and we can create that advantage. We smelt aluminium. I know that if we can get aluminium at a discounted price, we can add much more production in the motor industry in this country. I know that. Companies have told us that. And the iron and steel is a fundamental product across different things. I mean, there's chemical polymers. There's all sorts of other things as well. So that's why they're different value chains. And the industrial value chains are the ones we're talking about. So I think that this is what we say. This is the proposition. You'll see, as Garth said, in the next IPAP, the one that's coming out, which, by the way, if I could just give a little commercial, I think you're going to find a lot more user-friendly, a lot easier to read. The presentation, I think, is top shot. I must commend the team in advance. But the point about it is that you'll see there's a significant piece of work on beneficiation. And from our point of view, it's beneficiation that can support industrial development in our own country. So, we need to take it to another level. And I think that's a common challenge that the African continent is beginning to confront. I said it's the same thing as well with agricultural products. In the African continent, we're 60% of the world's uncultivated arable land, but we produce primary products and we don't produce agro-processing. South Africa, we're beginning to position ourselves and we're getting some good investments around agro-processing plants which are looking at the African market. But I think there's many, many other examples. Well, I think you must know the obvious story. I saw a film once, a CNN thing, their anti-slavery project, and they had some young boy who was cutting open cocoa beans in the Ivory Coast. And he didn't know what the hell these cocoa beans were for. He'd never eaten a bar of chocolate in his life. That is what I think Karl Marx meant when he talked about alienation of labor, by the way. But anyway, leave that aside. But this is the point, is that not a single chocolate bar is manufactured in the Ivory Coast, and Switzerland doesn't grow a single cocoa bean. So, I mean, it's how do you get more of that back into the African? Those are the challenges of industrialization. That's what beneficiation is about, and I think that's the proposition that I think underlies all this work that we're doing here on the iron and steel value chain. So perhaps Garth wants to just add.
The only thing, Minister, to add, I think, is just to confirm the fact that the Minister of Economic Development tabled the draft guidelines for the scrap metal export permits on the 25th of January, and therefore the maths is that presumably that closes sometime around the 25th of February. I can get the exact date to the committee as soon as I get back to Pretoria.
Can I just say, I've just been given a note which I think tells us a very important story. There's a country, I'm not going to say which one it is, a country which has told one of our officials, thank you very much for exporting the scrap metal to us because it creates 30,000 jobs in their economy. There's the challenge. We need 30,000 jobs in this economy.
Exactly. Minister, Mr. Strachan, DG, thank you very much, but I saw that there was one outstanding hand after you had finished, Minister, and that was the Honourable Hill Lewis, the last one on this point.
Minister.
Yeah.
mention of the fact that ArcelorMittal is going to go away and do some work and come back to you with a proposal of what they need to meet that kind of pricing model, and that you would do the same. Is government considering preferential bulk electricity prices for that kind of user, that kind of level of user, and is that something that you're working on from your side?
I can talk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question is the scores. I understood it. SCORE and IDC deal was actually a black empowerment deal as well. So I think that may, if I'm correct. So I've got a question on that. The moratorium. Look, not now. I mean, it should have been done 3 years ago to give us time to consult. You know, to me, exporting our scrap metal to the Asian countries, which is where it all goes, is the same as our rhino horn going to those countries. It's not in our national interest. The last question I'd have to the minister is, at Kumba, apparently there's been for the last 3 to 4 months a dramatic reduction in production at one of the big mines as a result of wildcat strikes, intimidation, murder, and so on. And I understand that has been at a situation where some of these workers have got R1 million paid out in cash, all kinds of benefits. Is the minister intervening there, and has he spoken to this trade union, which I gather is not ANPUA, in fact I think it's a COSATU trade union, and what is he doing about that?
There's a completion of the questions now. Thank you, Minister.
No, thanks. I think the discussion, once we see what the price, the possible price in the South African market would be open to discuss all the things that would be needed to get there. I said it was open to that. So there's no agenda at this point, but we've indicated let's have that discussion. You tell us where you can get to and what you need to get there, and then we'll interrogate all the matters that are relevant to that, and what we can deliver, and what you need to deliver, what somebody else needs to deliver. That would be the basis on which we have to see if it's a viable and feasible proposition, or whether we should go and look elsewhere. And I think that's basically what it's going to be. The second question about there already was a BE component in the existing SCORE arrangement, but I think maybe Garth Strachan can say how it's changed or not changed in the current IDC model. But I think that maybe I should just say that there was quite a lot of engagement, including by myself and my colleague from EDD about this. There could have been a possibility that this was sold to, this was sold as scrap, and that it wasn't actually a viable going concern. So there was a lot of effort put in to ensuring that this stays on as a viable concern, and we secured that understanding really early with Anglo-American, but then we were very instrumental in making sure that continued. But I think maybe Garth can talk about that. Look, I think the parallel with export of scrap metal and export of rhino horn is quite a useful one. Why don't we? Yeah, that's it. We're exporting the it's not the family silver, is it? It's the family iron ore that we don't need to export. We need it here. I think that's what it's about. And we need to. It's a resource which everybody else realizes is an important resource in their own economies. And then. It's not some of those issues are not directly under myself about unions, and in fact even the mining operation as a whole is not. But I do think it's important that we, maybe it's to contextualize what I said earlier on about beneficiation. We have lived in the last 10 years or so in the context of a commodity super cycle, particularly for commodities, mineral commodities that are feeding into industrial processes. I think we can see that peak is gone. The platinum price has gone down. The iron ore price is not rising any longer. Now, we can say it's got something to do with cycles and where China's at, and now China starts to grow, but China's going to grow in a structurally different way in the next 10 years. So I think that we ought not to be putting all our eggs in the basket of hoping there's going to be another commodity super cycle and that we can merely hitch onto that and that that's the way forward for mining. We have to get more value out of those mineral products, as I said before, even when we sell them and export them, but also in our own industrialization efforts. I think that just underscores that. And look, I mean, I think that, Sishen An or company had the good sense to follow the precepts of the mining charter, as far as I understand it. I can't say absolutely whether they followed it, but their social responsibility, employee ownership, and stuff like that, I think were very, very good. That's not in dispute. There may be some industrial relations issues there, I don't know, but they're not that sharp in compared to other places which didn't do that, and where there was manifest inequality. But the real issue for us is that, you know, a few years ago we said there were 30 more years left, there are 25 more years left of that extremely valuable resource. What are we going to do with that over the next quarter century that's going to create a sustainable basis for life after that resource? I think that's the issue. And it's in our book, it's at the very least 21.4% of that output must be available at cost plus 3% to support competitive steel production in South Africa.
Minister, Mr. Strachan.
Yes, Madam Chair, my understanding is that the score shareholding translates into 24% black empowerment holding in score metals, and the IDC holding 76%, but that the shareholder agreement will allow for the expansion, subject to a set of terms and conditions, of the black economic empowerment portion of the equity going forward. Secondly, to assure the committee that the new steel investment would absolutely have a strong black economic empowerment component in it, we can't give details. That's obviously the subject of a set of confidential negotiations, including with an external overseas investor. And thirdly, under the direction of the Director General, as we signaled last year, we are working on making a set of proposals around a financial support instrument for black economic empowerment in the manufacturing sector specifically, because as we all know, there's been a lag in that sector for a host of reasons which we've outlined previously to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Strachan. Mr. I know we raised the issue of AGOA, which I raised with you, but what I want to do is just to complete this particular part of the process, and also I do want to say something just while we have a quorum here, which becomes important to us. But to me, it's quite clear that this, briefing you've given us, we have been waiting for it, as you have yourself, over processes, and it's come at a very, very important time for all of us in the country. And I think we do take on board the impact around the decisions we are taking, especially with respect not only to the creation of jobs, but also the acceleration of the manufacturing processes and productive investment. And we look forward to further information and engagements in this regard, Minister. Thank you very much just on that one. Members, if I can just indicate, it's with respect to the program and so on, and I do apologize, I just had to nip out at that point, as you saw, with the whip taking over for a short while. But I want to just brief members, I'd asked you for a little bit of time, with respect to where we should go, where give the chair some space in respect of legal opinion and the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill. And really having studied the matter again and taken all factors into account, and I know members of the committee have gone to their respective political parties on the matter, I'm of the opinion then that we proceed, as was perhaps one of the options that we had before us, and that yes, we've done a very good, we've applied our minds, all that's been agreed to, we've gone through it effectively as this committee in terms of that tagging. However, we do acknowledge that there were certain aspects beyond ourselves that may need to be complied with. So while we won't take the decision now, we're going to put that through to Wednesday, and I do want members to come prepared to move the matter along in this respect. So I say this with the full quorum, you see, so that you're all made aware. I've asked the committee secretary to also make all members officially aware of the kind of position as chairperson I have come to, so that everyone does come back fully prepared on the matter. So we're not discussing it now, but I did say I would indicate to you by Friday where we stood on the matter. So if there's any comment, but it's not a discussion, do we have your agreement? Fine. Thank you very much for that. Really appreciate it. Just goes to show we highly focused, highly constructive, and we're certainly not delaying the committee back on these side issues, if you like. Thank you very much. Minister, we will be going into the bilaterals, but before we do that, let us, the issue came up briefly at our previous meeting on AGOA, etc., and some members perhaps were not fully satisfied with some of the information we were given, and were of the opinion that perhaps there is more information, other information that as minister you could share with us in this regard. And the concern was, yes, we do need to retain the strength of AGOA, but how is this going to work to our own benefit? Perhaps I can, unless the whip wanted to add anything in that regard, ask you to comment. And I'm very sorry that the member in particular who raised the issue has had to absent himself from the response. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Let me just say the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, there will be quite a lot of debate in the United States over this, over the course of this year, because the extension of AGOA, decisions will start to be taken next year on the extension of AGOA, and there will be quite a bit of debate on that. Although Congress tends to take decisions right at the last moment, I think it's important that we understand that. We're going to get all kinds of messages coming from different players in the United States, and I think it's important that we understand that and that we develop a national position, which as far as possible is, I would have said bipartisan, multipartisan, that we could all buy into and that we could all deliver a consistent message. The Africa Growth and Opportunity Act is a non-reciprocal market access arrangement applicable to a number of African countries. South Africa benefits from that, and we benefit from that actually in some ways in a more mature way than other countries do, in the sense that there's a bigger diversity of products that go into the United States under AGOA preferences than is the case of other African countries, but that's largely because we are more industrialized than those other countries. Now, the AGOA was passed by the U.S. Congress. In the U.S. system, Congress has got a lot of autonomy. Individual members of Congress are very much sensitive to their own specific district interests and needs and stuff like that. So when we interact, we have to interact not just with the government, with the administration, because we have interacted with the administration, I'll say a bit about that, on this, but also with Congress. There's also, when we talk to Congress people, as I have done on a number of occasions, it's not just important to talk to the congressperson or the senator, but also to their staffer, to the think tank that is around their party and so on and so forth. That's a whole big discussion like that. And I think many of us are going to start getting bits and pieces of messages from that whole big gamut of decision-making structure in the United States. And it's probably important that we have a consistent message. So let me just say one thing. First of all, it is important for us to take account of the history. The Trade Development and Cooperation Agreement, the free trade agreement we have with the European Union, predated the AGOA. The United States gave us AGOA knowing that there was a free trade agreement in place with the European Union. They developed a different architecture for different kinds of reasons. Now, at one stage there was a discussion in the framework of SACU, Southern African Customs Union, about whether we should have a free trade area with the United States. It didn't result in an agreement on either side. No one in SACU, and in the end the United States concluded that that was the way forward. We wouldn't have had an agreement which was just the EU agreement extended to the United States. It would have been a different animal. And in the end of the day, nobody wanted to go there. The important thing is that if we ended up in a free trade agreement instead of a AGOA, if we ended up there, it would not just be us who would be out of a AGOA. It would apply to Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland, one of which of those countries is the least developed country, Lesotho. That's what it would be. It wouldn't be just South Africa. So I think one important message is that you must understand that, the United States. It's not just us, it applies to the entire customs union, if there are to be any changes. Now, the U.S. and U.S. business and the administration have, like many important players around the world, recognized the importance of the African market and of South Africa in Africa. There is a growing interest in becoming involved, and I think that was manifest in the fact that at least last year there were two cabinet-level trade delegations that came to South Africa, one led by the Secretary of State and the other by the Acting Secretary of Commerce. I engaged with both of those, and we talked about AGOA. And the United States realizes that Africa is a growing proposition. There are 600 United States companies registered operating here in South Africa, and by the way, coming into the next treaty without the existence of a bilateral investment treaty. There are 600 of them operating in South Africa. And when Secretary Clinton's delegation came along, they said, now that total's out of date, there's going to be more. I don't know what the figure is right now. There's a growing interest in operating in the African continent. They realize it. They realize the importance of this. They also know that they're in competition in the African continent with other players. And I've said to them, and this is a message that they have brought on board the administration, is you're in competition. You're not just in competition with Europe. You're in competition with other players. And one advantage you have in this competitive struggle is that all of us value AGOA. You've got the goodwill that goes with AGOA. If you want to change it into something like the EPAs or TDCA, just look at all the uphill the EU's gone through with that. Is it really worth it? And I think that there's a hearing for that argument in the administration. I think there's a recognition that South Africa is a critical player in Africa. There's a hearing for that in the administration. What we're going to get from time to time is we get people turning around, which I understand was the discussion you had last time, saying that product X, the EU has a 5% advantage in the access to the South African market. I say, if you want to think at that level, you know, you're not thinking strategically, you're thinking narrowly. And that is because there is a TDCA in place with the European Union. Some companies tell us, so they say, well, anyway, we'll just use our European operation. I say, well, do it then if you want to. Do it like that. But then sometimes they say, well, isn't there a way we can deal with it? And we say to them and to the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, what is that mechanism? None of us have got any appetite. They haven't got any appetite for an FTA. We don't have an appetite for an FTA. So what is the mechanism? And there's no real answer to that. So I think that the message that would come from us is strategically, AGOA is something that we all value as important and is cementing a positive relationship with the United States. The rollover of AGOA
would be something which could benefit all of us. And the United States would then be able to position itself quite well. I think that that argument is quite well understood by the administration, both by Secretary Clinton and by U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk. He's leaving at the end of the month. I don't know who the new one is and what his view might be, but certainly with Ron Kirk. I think that's well understood. Of course, there are many other voices in Congress. We've engaged with lots of people in Congress. I'm seeing a senator next week who's coming here visiting. So we are engaged in ongoing discussion at that level. But I think you're going to hear lots and lots and lots and lots of messages. Let's have a consistent, solid voice as South Africa, as we have a solid, consistent voice of African AGOA countries, that we want to roll over of AGOA. We want all of us in it. I think that's basically the message. And if we could translate that message as a national multi-partisan consensus, I think that would help us quite a lot, because there are going to be engagements of parliamentarians, there are going to be engagements of party political nature, there's going to be engagements of all sorts of at that level, and there's a very complex arrangement. So I think that would be the message I would give, Chair, on AGOA. I don't know. Xavier's sitting here. I don't know if there's any further discussions. But at some point in the year, I am intending to go to the U.S. I want to travel less this year than I did last, but I'm intending to go there and you know, engage again with people in Congress on this matter. Thanks.
Right. Thank you very much, Minister. Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Khadebe.
Madam Chair, thank you. The Minister, as usual, is on top of his game. I have one or two questions. One is, what percentage of U.S. imports are affected by AGOA? I suspect it's tiny. That's the first thing. The second thing is, as I understand it from what the Minister said, it's a unilateral agreement given to us by the United States. All right, in terms of their thinking, it was to encourage manufacturing, economics, because, you know, in the United States, talking about Marx is quite a quaint little event. I'm not saying it isn't relevant in South Africa, but in the U.S., I think it would bring a smile to people's faces. But the thing is, they wanted to encourage manufacturing, trade in Africa, and they said, well, let's give it to them. Now, the question which I came across, because I was in the States last week, was one of the guys said, but you know, we've got a BMW factory in our state. You guys are now importing BMWs cheaper than we actually produce them. Therefore, you know, that's going to impact our state. Now, and the Minister's party answered that question. But I think, or you could say, you know, even in the U.S. today, I think something like 30% of any car manufactured in the U.S. is actually produced in the U.S. They come from Brazil, from South Africa, from Indonesia. But the point is, Madam Chair, and I think AGOA will go straight ahead. So that's the thing. But the last question is timing. The trouble with AGOA, as I understand it, Madam Chair, and I'm not an expert on trade agreements, is that we are, in a sense, I think we must use one's words carefully. We are receivers of a very generous unilateral agreement. Now, it's got a time limit on it. And if they're going to say, well, we'll extend it for 3 years and then it's for 5 years or whatever it is, I think the thing is to try to negotiate from the Americans a longer term. And I just would like to know what the Minister and Mr. Karim is are looking at in terms of those negotiations. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable McIntosh. Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, I think I appreciate the input from the Minister on this issue of AGOA. But as I said that during the previous portfolio committee meeting, that the AGOA is critical for our own industrial policy action plan. As we engaged with the auto industry on the issue of industrial police action plan, the issue of export of the cars, they told us very clearly that if we can lose AGOA status as the country, It means that they are going to lose their competitive advantage as the auto industry towards that side. So I think that on our side is that we must be very careful. We must ensure that this thing is done, but not by selling our soul. But I agree with the minister when he said that we must have many voices with a single message. I think that's the critical aspect. So the question I ask the chairperson is that when is the minister going to convince our stakeholders so that each and every person can speak the same language around that issue? Because if it's going to be reviewed next year, it means that that stakeholder type of convergence of ideas must be done as early as possible. Because I know that Americans are very aggressive. You go to your computer, you open your email, you find that there's a lot of issues which they raise with you. So what is critical in the process is that you must be able to communicate the same message, that is, the same message, but many voices. I think that's key. So when is the minister or the department going to convene the stakeholder type of arrangement so that we really speak with one language throughout? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe. Minister, would you like to just comment there and respond?
No, well, thank you very much. I mean, the percentage of African imports entering the U.S. under AGOA and GSP is less than 3% of their total imports. It's a very, very small part of total trade. I don't know what the figure is of goods that enter South Africa on better terms than the U.S. enters that. And I've actually said this to them. Tell us, what are they? How many are they? What industries or sectors do you think are disadvantaged? Because it comes up as a sort of a hypothetical argument. And we haven't got that information yet. I suspect it's very, very small. And that's the issue. So, you know, they're going to graduate us out because of that. I think that would be a message that we send back to them. Let me say that AGOA was intended, yes, to help African countries to diversify their exports. It doesn't cover absolutely every product that we would like to send into the U.S. For example, we don't get single-stage transformation status for clothing products. Other countries do. For example, we are not allowed to include our canned peaches. We can send our canned pears under AGOA status. So they include absolutely everything, but it gives us something. It is a generous unilateral offer. Most countries that are benefiting from AGOA have managed to construct some clothing industry, which exports there. And we've got a more diversified economy, so there's a bigger range of products and actually not too many clothing products that go to the U.S. That's the broad picture. That used to, or it has included, on occasions, included automotive products. It has included that. But the issue in the automotive industry is not really the tariffs. The issue is the nature of the industry programs that are there. Right now, I think it's Alabama. The state of Alabama has made an extremely generous support program available for the construction of automotive plants there, and that we may actually lose exports of one of our brands to the United States because that plant will take up the slack. That's the issue. It's much more the question of the support measures, which are operated at the level of states in the United States. I mean, this is one of the things. Industrial policy, people say, well, you know, the whole discourse on industrial policy has changed dramatically. I see this when I go to the World Economic Forum. A few years ago, it was almost a swear word. Now everybody does it. But in the United States, they've always done it much more at the level of states than at the level of the federal government. And that's evident in the United States now. So I think that the reasonable term of extension, yes, that's absolutely what we want. We've been saying to them, roll it over for a reasonable period of time that allows the investments in the industries that are going to benefit from it to take place. Don't roll it over for a year, roll it over for a decade or something. That's the message that all of us from Africa have been giving. The difficulty about the U.S. decision-making process, I went to the AGOA forum last year in Washington, and the issue at that time was the rollover of the extension of third country fabric. Now, we weren't involved. As I said, we don't get it. But our neighboring countries, we're talking about orders being canceled because there was no certainty about it. They went up to the last moment. the last moment before they managed to do it. And they had this is the way it works in the U.S. You have to, I can't remember what the name of the procedure is, but you have to get it to go through on the understanding that some congressperson is not going to stick some completely unrelated matter as an amendment. I will agree to that as long as you put the manufacturing weapons plant in my district or something like that. And they had a huge negotiation around that and only just got it through right at the last moment. Now, I think we may find something like that. A lot of discussion. Congress is not terribly united, not terribly efficient at taking decisions. It may be like that, and we're going to have to work through all of that. But as I said earlier, I think if we have a consistent message, the slogan that the Honorable Khadevi came up with, one message, many voices, is fine. And if you think the Portfolio Committee thinks it's worth us convening a forum on this, I'm sure we can organize that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Minister. And I'm glad that we did have this discussion and input now, and certainly we've benefited. I wanted to move on to a tea break, unless this is on a go?
A very short question, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I was just interested that the Minister drew this distinction between the administration and Congress. Look, I'm not looking for an overseas trip, please, and I know that's often a hidden agenda, but would it be helpful, for example, and maybe it's quite unnecessary, for us as a trade and industry delegation to go across and say to the Congress, look, we represent the MPs on trade and industry and we're coming here to push a goa. I suspect it's not necessary myself, because I think a goa, I can't see the Americans not agreeing to a goa. It's just that decade to roll it over, which would be wonderful. But Madam Chair, I just put that as a question to the Minister and for his wisdom, because he's obviously up to speed on what's going on there.
Quick response, Minister.
Well, I can't say whether the Portfolio Committee's got the budget and what its plans are. I can't say anything like that. But if you are able to find yourself going over there and you are wanting to do this, I'm sure you would find that we would be able to assist in trying to develop a program. So I can't say whether you should do it or not, but if you were to do it, the department and the foreign economic representative who's in the United States and the embassy and the ambassador there will steer you around to go and talk to the relevant people. As I said, it's not just a question of talking to Congress people. You've got to talk to the Congress people, but also you've got to talk to, what these people called aides and all that kind of thing. It's quite an involved process. But we've got to work the pitch, shall we, get the basic here?
Yes. Look, I think we can discuss this further over tea and those kinds of issues, but I think you're quite mindful, Minister, that yes, budgets are involved and we have to weigh up the priorities of where we are going and what we believe can be achieved from going on undertaking such study tours. But yes, a good try there, Honourable McIntosh. Right. But thank you very, very much, Minister. Thank you, Mr. Strach and DG, just on that matter. We're going to break for a short, it's a Friday. Everyone wants to get away. 10-minute tea break, please.